Welcome back to Why Are We Like This, the show that treats Florida like the active crime scene it is. I am your host, David Quinones. I am joined, of course, by my co-host, Tomas Kennedy. What's up, Tomas?
Same shit, different day, David. Same shit, different day.
You got to come up with some new shit, because that's the point of the podcast, is what's the new shit?
What are you talking about? Right? Last time I went on like a diatribe about it. The that's eclipse, true. The earthquake, civil war. I'm trying to keep it short to compensate for my insane intro last episode.
Yeah, we got off track. That's true. Keeping us on track, of course, is our other co-host, Gerald Doherty, who is miles away.
Yeah, this is new shit, different day for me. I'm in Copenhagen. I'm in a land of very low stress. I don't want to come back. I do want to just stay here and see how it is that they managed to create such a stress-free society.
Yeah, they've managed to handle a lot of those issues that for some reason here in this country, and particularly in this state, we continue to relitigate. And in that arena of issues that we thought we had litigated for decades and decades and that continue to bedevil the Sunshine State, we are going to talk again and give this week and give it its own spotlight, the issue of abortion in Florida. And in our last episode, we kind of ended by talking a little bit about the decision of the Florida Supreme Court to allow abortion to be on this November's ballot, and how it will be, of course, known vote yes on Amendment 4, which I think everybody on this podcast is firmly in the corner of yes on Amendment 4. But to help us break it down a little bit more this week, we are joined by Donnie Martins, a reproductive rights and justice advocate and expert and a fixture down here in Florida. Donnie, welcome to Why Are We Like This.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for covering the issue. And I will try not to engage in primal screaming as we discuss what Florida is trying to put folks through in order to access care.
Yeah, that's what they invented the mute button for. So it's okay, get the screaming out, yeah. But just, you know, be mindful of the mute button.
Flip the audio, we don't care.
Yeah. So from your perspective, I'm just curious for people who follow this issue, because it's playing out in so many different in different triangulations in different states, and particularly conservative states around the union. And I'm wondering, did this take you at all by surprise, the Supreme Court's decision, and folks that are sort of in your line of work, did it send you scrambling at all? Like, oh my gosh, we have to put together a campaign. We have to support this amendment. Or how did it play out in real time for you?
All of these scenarios had already been played out by the different organizations, by anyone who was, paying attention to this specific issue. I think it was the strategic decision-making that took us a little bit by surprise, but it doesn't mean that people weren't prepared. So on the services side of things, because the six-week ban had already been signed by the governor and it was pending the resolution of this case on the 15-week ban, every single abortion fund, every single clinic in the state already had a plan of action for what was going to happen once the six-week ban came into effect. How are you going to move folks? How are you going to, see folks for a first ultrasound? And then to what clinics are you going to send them out of state? How are you going to help navigate that situation? The language was already here for us. We knew that it had been signed. And so on the sides of services, everyone had already been preparing for it. It was a matter of when, right? And on the side of advocacy, the same way, the folks who have been gathering petitions for the ballot initiative, they were very confident about their language. They were very confident. They had been doing this over and over again. They had been seeing what had been happening in other states, and they had polling showing them that this was a very popular ballot initiative. So they were already prepared and ready to go as soon as these two Supreme Court decisions came down. What I think surprised a lot of people was we know that this is a very conservative court. What on earth were they thinking enacting at the same time a six-week ban and a ballot initiative that will only be fueled by people's anger to said six-week ban? It just didn't make any sense politically from the side of conservatives. So there was a suspicion or an educated guess from those of us watching from the outside that they would actually hold off because they didn't have a there was no need or deadline on the 6-week ban, on the resolution of that 15-week ban that would trigger the 6-week ban. Folks thought if they decided to let the language move forward, then they wouldn't enact a 6-week ban because it is incredibly, extraordinarily unpopular. And once it starts getting applied, we're going to start seeing, unfortunately, horrific cases. It's going to be a public health disaster. And this in no way can be good for conservatives on the ballot or for conservative issues on the ballot. So we all kind of assumed that the court was going to try to save them from themselves, which is not what we're seeing now. What we're seeing is potentially them seeing a writing on the wall that this ballot initiative is extremely popular and that the chances that it passes is big. And so if they want to make, you know, their conservative donors very happy, they need to enact the 6-week ban right now while they can.
Danny, would you be able to actually break down these two joint decisions by the Supreme Court and what they mean? By the Florida Supreme
Court. Right. So it was there was a lot of confusion that day because these are actually two separate decisions around the same issue, right? One of them is we're going to call it political, and the other one is electoral, and we're going to call it a service decision. So we're going to start with chronologically. So a few years ago, after DeSantis's reelection and his plight to run for president, he decided that he needed to out-Trump Trump, and this was one of the issues that he was going to do it with. And so the Florida legislature had put forth a 15-week ban. That is the ban that we currently live under. So pregnancies are terminating a pregnancy is illegal after 15 weeks of gestational age in Florida currently. This bill had been challenged in the courts by a series of groups, and the Supreme Court, the Florida Supreme Court, needed to make a decision. In the meantime, the Florida legislature got into some extra time trying to make the governor happy and enacted an even more restrictive 6-week ban, which for anyone listening is a, for all intents and purposes, a total abortion ban. The vast majority of people don't find out that they're pregnant before 6 weeks. And even if they do, with all of the other trap laws that we currently live under, the chances of you being able to access care, access an actual service before you are 6 weeks is very, very limited. So they enact the 6-week ban. This is an extremely aggressive ban. This is a public health disaster waiting to happen. But because the first 15-week ban continues to be fought pending the decision of the Supreme Court, the 6-week ban cannot be enacted until this case is resolved. And this had just been lagging. There is no deadline attached to it. Basically, every single Thursday at 11 a.m., we would find out whether we lived under a 6-week ban or not. On the other side, in parallel, there's an electoral ballot initiative that learns from Ohio, that learns from other experiences across the different states, and that is attempting to protect constitutionally, change the Florida Constitution so that government and politicians cannot interfere in access to abortion care in the state of Florida. This is a single issue ballot initiative. It's very simple language, and it gathered more than the signatures that it required in order to be on the ballot. The language of any type of ballot initiative needs to be approved by the same Florida Supreme Court. And so there were two decisions that were pending in the Supreme Court. The second one, the ballot initiative, did have a deadline. And they waited until the last minute, until the last day of this deadline, in order to amid their decision. Their decision was, their opinion was that the language was approved, which means this ballot initiative is going in every single Floridian's ballot in November, and it made 60% of the total vote plus one in order to pass. That's the threshold. And then on the same day that they said, yes, we're going to approve this, Florida's going to vote on whether or not they want government interfering in access to abortion care. At the same time, they decided, oh, and by the way, this other case that we've been sitting on, we're gonna resolve it here as well. And so they sided on the side of the 15-week ban, which meant that it automatically triggered within 30 days the 6-week ban. This means that for all intents and purposes, as of May 1st, every single person in Florida that needs an abortion that is over 6 weeks cannot access care in the state of Florida.
And Florida was sort of one of the, not sort of, was the last sort of like bastion for, you know, abortion services in the South, right? Which meant that a lot of people from surrounding states would come here because it was the closest to them, right? Now that option for the date that you just delineated for us has been cut off from them. So like, what are, you know, like the service providers and the people that need those services, about what are they about to experience if they're not experiencing it already?
It's taking a little bit for people to even be aware of this change, but you are absolutely right. A lot of the people, Florida was servicing all of the Southeast right now. It was the only place that had like a 15 weeks around our area. And so we were seeing a lot of folks coming in from Georgia, Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama. We continue to see those calls coming in. We're continuing to see those calls coming in. People are desperate because they know that they're running against yet another clock now. We estimate that there's 17 million women of reproductive age in the South right now that don't have access, easy access to something that is sometimes life-saving medical care. And so what we're seeing is folks are going to have to travel to either Virginia, Illinois, DC, New York, Maryland. It is extremely extenuating, and it's very important to say this is traveling is a privilege.
Yeah.
Those who can travel to get care are going to be the few and far in between who can, one, afford to travel, two, have the proper documentation to be able to travel these distances. Most of these distances are not easy to drive. We were already seeing this in Florida, folks driving from Texas all the way to Florida because they didn't have the proper documentation to be able to fly. And so they were taking long drives in order to be able to access care. Those folks, the open questions are, where do they go? Are they even able to access care? And then you have, you know, economic constraints, family constraints. Can you take days off of work? All of these things are designed to dissuade people from actually accessing care. But the loophole here and the blind spot for all of these conversations are abortions are also medically necessary in many cases. And in these cases, it becomes very, it can become a tragedy very, very quickly when folks with an ectopic pregnancy, with a fetal malformation, with any type of situation during their pregnancy that requires experiencing a miscarriage or a stillbirth, because those people have to undergo an abortion in order to avoid sepsis, to avoid infections. The reality is the folks that are writing these bills are not medical professionals. They have no idea what happens in a clinic and what happens in a medical conversation. And the effects of this go way beyond what any of them think.
And Danny, do you find that the service providers that are, you know, dealing with people needing these services, are people like aware of what's going on? Because like we might be aware about it in Florida, right? And aside, you know, in other states across the country, like you might be aware of it if you're like reading Politico or like, you know, like the New Republic or watching CNN or whatever. But like the reality is that most people are sort of like low information voters and don't take huge amounts of, you know, like political content, right? I mean, we're seeing that, you know, the amount of like consumption of political content has decreased actually in the last few years. So are you seeing that people are actually aware of what's going on and they're like diminishing opportunities to get these services?
So right now I can tell you, because I also do patient intake and case management as a volunteer for different organizations, people are not aware of this. People are very confused. It's creating, in our experience, every time there's a ban, there's a period where people are just not aware, and it's followed by a period where people are incredibly confused. So they call you and they say, well, does that mean that I need to be at least 6 weeks in order to be able to access the abortion? Like, they're incredibly confused. It doesn't make sense. And so there's clearly, this is not reaching folks just yet. However, what I will say is it has been my personal experience and professional experience in every country that I've worked in Latin America, as well as seeing these states, these bans get enacted in different states in the U.S. Once really stringent abortion restrictions happen, tragedies happen, and tragedies do get news coverage. And so, unfortunately, I think it's going to get really, really bad very quickly. We're looking at a public health disaster coming into Florida, and that public health disaster is going to come into the news, because now we're going to be hearing about women bleeding to death, about folks dying of sepsis, or like having to wait until near death in order to be sent somewhere else, like really tragic situations that are going to hit home. It's no longer going to be a story about somewhere in Texas. It's no longer going to be a story about somewhere in Latin America. It's going to be a story from your community, from your neighborhood, from the, you know, the hospital or the clinic that you just visited. It's going to be someone a lot closer to Floridians now. And that's going to, unfortunately, educate people about the disastrous consequences of these bans very quickly.
And I didn't know this until I started preparing. We were going to have you on at post-ops. Florida is only after Illinois in terms of rate of abortion increase. So it's seen like the most new abortions since the Dobbs decision. Now, like you say, people are already having to scramble to resource centers that are stretched thin, only to be told you might have to take a drive up to Virginia if you're in your second trimester. A lot of the coverage now is about the stakes behind the amendment, which would, I guess, void the 15-week ban. For people who'd like to have like a humane, like medically driven, not politically driven abortion policy in Florida, what are the stakes of this amendment in November? Do they go far enough in your eyes? What would be not just, you know, what's on, not just on the horizon, but what would it take to have like a just abortion policy in Florida in your eyes?
So the language of the amendment cannot be more plain and simple, right? It calls out stopping and limiting all kinds of government interference in abortion care up to viability. Viability is a term that I appreciate a lot the use of, because it's a medical term. It's not a political term, which means doctors understand what viability is. Patients understand what viability is because they're in the conversations with their doctors, and they have those conversations privately. And that is a decision that is made case by case, and it's a decision that is made in doctors' offices, which is how I believe care needs to happen. You know, medical care is, abortion is a medical care issue. It's not a political issue. Now, does it go far enough? I mean, it's very clear that the threshold is very high here. A 60% threshold is not an easy, this is not going to be already won. We know right. That abortion bans are incredibly unpopular. They're unpopular across the political aisle. They're unpopular across demographics. They're unpopular across religious beliefs. And they're unpopular in Florida across age, across every walk of life. This includes the current abortion ban that we've seen here. However, we also know that there's a lot of low information voters, and it's going to be at the hands of the ballot initiative campaign to make a case for this specific ballot initiative, for Amendment 4, that convinces the voters. And that it, because of the high threshold and because of where we are politically in Florida, it'll be a matter of the campaign needs to make this about abortion as a non-political, non-partisan issue. Because it, for a mathematical reason, right? The numbers are just not there for this to be a partisan issue. If we need 60% of the votes, then the campaign needs to be communicating this into a way that provides, that gives grace for voters in Florida to vote conservative in every piece of this ballot, and then on this matter, vote in favor of limiting government interference on abortion. Vote yes on Amendment 4. Because the only way that we get to 60% is creating a wide enough, creating a wide enough coalition of people who agree with this. The polling is there and the messaging is there to do so. We know that folks who are more conservative leaning on a bunch of other things don't like government interference. We know that folks that are, you know, that have more conservative views on a lot of different issues also don't like, see abortion as an issue that is a familiar issue, that is a personal issue, that is an issue that people, it's a decision that people should be making on the insides of their homes, their faith, their families, their doctors. And they don't like the idea that people don't need care. Today, earlier today, I was on a phone with a man who was calling for his wife from Mississippi. They were trying to get to Florida. They're not going to be able to get to Florida. It was a medically necessary abortion. They were trying to get out of Mississippi because Mississippi doctors, the doctors had their hands tied. He told me, these are the doctors are being very sympathetic. They just say that there's nothing they can do. And he told me while we were on the call, this is absolutely ridiculous. You know, I never thought, you know, I never understood. I was never in favor of abortion, but how can it be that when it's medically necessary, they're making it so hard for us? And, it's those types of cases and the exposure to those types of cases that make people who think that they knew where they stood on abortion change their minds about how they see it, because they start seeing, oh, well, it's not that clear cut anymore. It's a different situation when the real life consequences are in front of you. So this is what we're going to have to start seeing in Florida.
Danny, you know, this reminds me in the 1970s, you know, Roger Jepson won a U.S. Senate seat in Iowa. He's a Republican. And yes, folks, Iowa actually used to be very Democratic back in the day. But Roger Jepson won this seat from an incumbent Democrat by basically plastering, ads that were mailed directly to voters. He plastered an image of a fully formed fetus that was a stillborn, but they basically lied and said that this was, you know, like the fetus that is, you know, up for abortion in most cases, right? And that campaign worked, you know what I mean? And I think you're starting to see those type of tactics being employed by the opposition here in Florida, right? I mean, they're saying that the referendum strips parental consent for minors that need abortions, which is a lie. And, you know, we talked about this privately, right? I mean, the first poll post approval of the ballot referendum language is out. It's an Emerson College poll with a sample size of 1,000, which is not the best, but it's also not like negligible for a Florida statewide poll. And it said that 42% of voters say they support the amendment. 25 say they would vote no, but 32% are undecided. This is one poll. We don't have an aggregate yet, you know, so take that what you may, you know what I mean? But there is, I think, a large part of voters in the middle that are going to be, you know, flooded with information from both sides of the aisle, right? And, you know, people like to say things like, oh, and this passed even in Kansas, you know, but in Kansas, it passed by 57%. And as you noted, you need 60 in Florida, right? So it's going to be tricky. And, you know, going back to just more of like the electoral strategy about this, you're seeing the Democrats in Florida like go really hard on this, and not necessarily from like, or just a value standpoint, but this is going to help us flip Florida, right? Blue, take back Florida, or whatever the catchphrase is nowadays. And on the other hand, you have Donald Trump sort of triangulating and talking about like, well, I think the 6-week ban is in Florida is too much. I actually support a 15-week ban, and actually it's up to the states, and just doing kind of this like word salad around the issue. And you have this the state Republicans being like, we're going to oppose this by any means. So what do you make of all this? What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, what I think is going to happen? So from the poll, I would say it's telling us what we already know, which is there needs to be a campaign about this, and people need to get informed, and people need to get engaged, and people need to get persuaded about this. From every single poll before then, we know that 6-week bans, that abortion bans in general, are hugely unpopular. The question on this poll is, do you support Amendment 4? Since the campaign on Amendment 4 is getting launched tomorrow, we're Friday as we're recording this, like the official launch of the campaign is tomorrow. I think from this poll, I wouldn't expect less than this large amount of people who are undecided because they're uninformed right now about it. Now, you very accurately are pointing out this is not going to be in a vacuum. There's going to be special interests on the other side that are going to do what special interests on the other side do, which is plastering a bunch of fetuses everywhere, which is what we've seen anti-rights groups do all across the board, appeal to all of this imagery. Please vote so that they don't kill me, spread disinformation about how abortions actually happen, the creation of fetus cemeteries with tiny little fake tombs, tiny little fake, all baby clothes being thrown, baby shoes being plastered before courts, before legislatures, in order to persuade them to vote on one side or the other. Echograms being plastered with heartbeats. We have seen what the other side will throw in order to move people through disinformation to support the current status quo. But what we're going to have in Florida is, and I say this with pain in my heart, is we're going to have, unfortunately, very real cases that are going to get, like, there's going to be a public health disaster here. Mm. We're already starting to feel the situation. The clinics are already preparing and bracing for what's coming, because it gets really, really horrific very quickly. And so I think it's going to be, there's this campaign, and it's going to have to speak to folks that right now are more than undecided, I would say uninformed, and ensure that they're getting the right information before the disinformation fully floods them over, which we're going to see happen. But also, there's going to be real cases that hit close to home that are going to help make the case of like what is people's lived reality around these issues. So I am cautiously optimistic. My biggest caution there being 60% threshold is a very large threshold.
Yeah.
this campaign has their work cut out for them. And the best thing that they can do is ensure that they're advocating for abortion as a nonpartisan issue. This has nothing to do with the entire political noise. Abortion is more popular than Trump and Biden together. It's more popular than any elected official in this state or in any state. Abortion is incredibly popular. Abortion access is incredibly popular. It has been in one form of an, or another in different ballots across the state since the fall of Roe 11 times. It has won every single time. People care about this. People understand it. And people want to protect their rights to go to a clinic and talk to a doctor about their care and don't have that doctor and not have that doctor have their hands tied by ridiculous medieval legislation. People understand this. And so long as the campaign can continue to make the case that this has nothing to do with either side of the aisle and with the over-politicization and the noise that is going to happen, then they actually have a chance at that 60%.
Yeah, Gerald, like I would say that imagining all of the conservative New York, New Jersey, tri-state area people that have come down here in the last 4 years, which we know are tens of thousands, yeah, in the last, like, this will be a shock to them. This is something that even the conservative Northeasterner, who small business guy, maybe has a granddaughter who made a mistake and, yeah, you know, needed to avail herself of services. Like, for them, that stripe of, and you know, we both know these people very well, this will be a shock to them.
They come,
this is not what they came here
they
for.
Come to Florida looking for a land of convenience, and now there's something where they're being told where the state is deliberately trying to inconvenience either you or someone you know or someone you're related to. I mean, for all the talk that they do about conservatism and everything, I don't think they actually want to be governed by a lot of the policies that they themselves advocate for other people to be governed by. So yeah, yesterday, the big kahuna said that he expects this is going to pass in November. So hopefully that creates a permission structure among his supporters.
That's what it is. Yeah. They need to hear from him. Yeah. They need to hear it from him and whatever expectation he sets. A lot of it is about the kind of the stupid politics of owning, which we know that if Donald Trump narratively said,
doesn't want to get owned. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to get owned, then this would be a problem. Yeah. But if he said, if it was like, oh no, this isn't owning, we actually like this, mm-hmm, this is good, then I mean, I've told Danny on our little show chat that we have, which is locked deep in a vault and nobody will ever be allowed access to. But in our show chat, I think we've all said in one way or another, like if you were to take two outcomes of November in Florida, and one is like just overall Democrats being successful in their elections and Amendment 4 passing, I put my money on Amendment 4. I think it's actually way more likely that Amendment 4 gets 60% of the vote than we see some sea change, yeah, or even really significant Florida Democrats.
It's going to be like Amendment 4, hopefully it passes by like 61-62% like the other, yeah, referendums, mm-hmm, and then like a Trump sweep of like 58%.
Gerald, you missed it. You missed. Yeah. I read a tweet. I read a tweet from a guy named at knife wielding hemophiliac.
Okay.
And his prediction was 65% weed, 63% abortion, 58% Trump. Yeah. Somehow.
Yeah. That is what will happen.
That is Florida, yeah, now. That's what Florida is, yeah, these days.
But Danny, going back to your expertise, because you know, in the previous episode, we did like sort of like a weird episode yesterday talking about, yeah, eclipses, earthquake, immigration, abortion. It was a lot. But anyways, we did mention, you know, my travels through Latin America, where, you know, where there's a lot of abortion bans, you know, and places like Ecuador that has like a near de facto total abortion ban, you know, and the fact that you just meet, you know, meeting people or whatever. I just saw a lot of like young women, you know, that have abortion, you know, that don't have access to abortion and that have children at a very young age, right? So I think, you know, going back to what you're saying, that's what's going to happen in Florida, right? Aside from like the horror stories of ectopic pregnancies or whatever, you're just going to see a lot of like very young girls, a lot of underage girls, frankly, you know, that are having sex in high school or whatever, have to, you know, getting pregnant and all of a sudden being faced with the prospect of carrying the term, the baby to pregnancy. But I wanted to ask you, can you paint, because I think with your, with the work you've done internationally, I think you can paint a much better picture of what total abortion bans have meant in, you know, the Latin American countries that we come from.
Yeah, it's not a nice picture.
No.
So what that looks like, no. Latin America has some of the, is home to a few total abortion bans and a lot of extremely restrictive abortion legislation, like you mentioned in Ecuador. But in Honduras, in Dominican Republic, in El Salvador, we have total abortion bans. Which means not even to save the life of a person can you perform an abortion. And what that looks like concretely in numbers is we're looking at highest numbers in teen pregnancies, in child pregnancies, which are horrific numbers, child motherhood, child pregnancies, but also narratively, what that looks like is we have, for example, in the Dominican Republic, the story of Esperancita. Esperancita is a girl who finds out that she's pregnant because she's getting a medical checkup. She's 16 years old. She lives in the Dominican Republic. She gets a medical checkup because something is wrong, finds out both that she has leukemia and that she's 6 weeks pregnant. 6 weeks pregnant. And because of the total abortion ban, there is nothing that doctors can do. They cannot give her chemotherapy out of fear and the life-saving treatment that she should get out of fear that it would affect the embryo. And so this girl, alongside her mother, try to appeal this decision. They go to the courts. They go to judges. They ask for amparos, for legal space, I believe is the word in English. They attempt all of their venues. They attempt everything that they can. Doctors with their hands tied are forced to watch her die. She eventually dies from complications of said pregnancy with an underlying medical condition. So that's what happens in Latin America in a lot of countries because doctors cannot help folks. We also have in El Salvador, a series of women who have ended up being incarcerated for 40 years with sentences on aggravated homicide after having a stillbirth or a pregnancy complication or a miscarriage. People who get prosecuted and made an example of. And when you look at these cases, they're systematic. It's always women who are indigenous, who are not from the big cities, who are incredibly vulnerable, who might not speak Spanish properly, who speak indigenous languages before they speak Spanish. And you read these criminal cases and it's the most vulnerable of the most vulnerable people are bearing the brunt of these horrific legislations. But I have to say, there's another part of Latin America, which is as the US is regressing and as we're like from the fall of Roe and we're seeing all of these states enact more regressive abortion bans. In Latin America, since December 2020, we also saw decriminalization of abortion in three major countries. In the
country.
Yes, including yours. So it starts with Argentina, December 2020, decriminalizes abortion up to 14 weeks with exceptions that go further, but absolutely without for any reason, up to 14 weeks. Then we see,
which by the way, I want to
Colombia.
14 weeks might sound bad because we do have a 15-week abortion ban in Florida, and you know we always want more. But Argentina is like an extremely Catholic country; like it cannot be overstated.
The Pope is Argentinian.
I mean, the Pope is Argentinian.
Exactly, like Pope Francis, Pope Francisco. But like, it can be overstated. What an insane accomplishment that was for the context of Argentina, you know?
Yeah. So the three countries that decriminalize, three major countries in the region, this is Argentina, this is Colombia, and this is Mexico. They are three primarily Catholic countries, extremely religious countries. They're not countries that, you know, can be called in any way progressive on these issues. And yet, the three of them decriminalized abortion within a span of 2 years. And if you look at what was done message-wise and what was done politically in these countries in order to be able to decriminalize abortion, and I'm sharing these stories because while I was working at the Women's Equality Center, we worked in alongside the Green Wave and decriminalization efforts on all of these countries. The strategy there was that this had to be not a bipartisan, because these are not bipartisan systems, but it had to be an issue that reached across the political aisle. The numbers are not there. Like, let's talk about Argentina, just because Tomás.
Our proximity, Ruth. Yeah.
But Argentina, the first time that the bill to decriminalize abortion gets introduced is 2018. And it passes on the lower chamber, and it doesn't pass in the Senate. It fails to reach the necessary votes in the Senate. Why? Because it has the convinced people. It has the progressives. It has only a third of the big picture, right? It has the folks that are already on our side, but it's missing everyone else. And so for 2 years, what the movement does is it continues to work on the progressive and the folks that already align on the issues, but it also creates a parallel movement and a parallel campaign that is a public health campaign where the messengers are not feminists, are not young women saying, you know, this is my body and it should be my choice. It's medical professionals, both men and women, saying this is a public health crisis that we cannot afford. And I am not someone from the left. I am not someone from the right. I am not green. I am not blue is the way that they say it there. I am just a doctor who is asking to be able to do their jobs, which is help my patients. And they come up with Let's Save a Thousand Lives campaign in response to the anti-rights campaign, Let's Save Both Lives. And they say, women are dying. And regardless of how you feel about feminist issues and about generally women's rights issues, and even regardless about how you personally feel about abortion, this is a public health issue. It's killing people. It's severely hurting people. It's not letting doctors do their job, and it's costing the state dollars because a lot of these people are ending up in the ER after botched abortions. And so when they were able to do that, they were able to get the numbers in the Senate of folks that could still talk to their constituents and say, you know, folks from conservative constituencies that could say, listen, I'm not in favor of fully decriminalized abortion, but right now we have a public health issue. And so this is the sensible policy to support. And that's what we need to create here. It's a venue for people who are in the middle, who we won't reach with the green wave, but who we shouldn't just let the other side have just because we might not agree on everything else.
Yeah, and to your point, it's not like there was, you know, prior to the decriminalization, it's not like there was no abortion in Argentina. There were abortions, you know, and I grew up hearing about them from family members that had them, and, you know, but they were just illegal abortions that were done in black market conditions, you know, that were quite frankly dangerous, you know, and you know, not performed in hygienic, like, you know, proper, you know, in a proper manner. So it's not like these things don't happen where there's, you know, like demand, there will always be abortions, right? But again, you know, it's like you said, you create like a public health crisis and put people at risk by not, you know, providing them in a legal, safe manner. But moving back to Florida, right? Let's go back to Florida because we're talking about Latinos. And I know you did work with, for example, Priorities USA, right? Targeting Latinos, polling Latinos, gauging, you know, public opinion among the diasporas. What do you think is how do you think the issue is going to land in you know, Florida Latino diaspora communities that tend to be more socially conservative, more religious, you know, and kind of bring this baggage with them? Something that we talked about in the last episode as well, and I'm curious to just posit this and get your opinion on it, is the Cubans, right? The Cubans, I find personally, just narratively, to be more accepting of abortion, right? Which is kind of like weird because they tend to be like more on the right of the issues. And I think it comes from, again, that Marxist tradition. You know, the Soviet Union was the first country in the world to legalize abortion. They, the Cuba for a long time was sort of a Soviet satellite state. They legalized abortion. They legalized other things like transgender reassignment surgeries, whatever, you know. But yeah, where do you think, you know, what do you think about that dynamic and just the rest of the diasporas and where they're going to land on this?
So I think it's smart that you're pointing out that Cubans have a different relationship to abortion, because the reality is, at least for the generations of Cubans that continue to have ties back home and that used to have a life back there, it's a service that they were used to having. So it's a very different thing when you lose something. It's what we've been seeing in the United States as well. Abortion had never been so popular as it was after the fall of Roe, because losing access to something that is allows you to look at it in a different way as well and say, wait, I used to be able to, regardless of how I felt about this issue or whether I would take in this route or not, this was a route that was available for me. What do you mean it's not anymore? And so that makes you think about things in a different way. So the Cubans do have those particularities, but in general, with Latino communities, what we see, and we've seen this in across the board in Latin America as well, is yes, folks are more conservative, and yes, folks are more religious. Catholic women also have abortion, though. I can tell you because I've held their hands through it. A group that has a lot of work in Latin America and that has a lot of work in the U.S. as well, Catholics for Choice, does entire lengths of communication around abortion to Catholic people based on Catholic values and principles. I think the key here is understanding that Latinos don't think about abortion in the same way that Americans do, that Americans that aren't Latinos do. The principle of individuality here is incredibly strong. And so there's a concept of abortion as something more familial in Latin America. It's something that happens between me and my family and my faith and then my doctor. These are decisions that we take more collectively. It's a little bit more communitarily centered. That is on one side. On the other one, it's very important to recognize that for a lot of folks, this is not an easy cookie cutter issue. It's not, well, if you're in favor of abortion, it means if you're against access to abortion, it means that you hate women. It's not that clear cut. We have to allow for grace with this community because it is okay for people to have complex feelings around abortion. It is okay for me to, for example, personally, not want to have an abortion or have certain feelings around abortions, but still want for other people to be able to have access to this service should they need it. I could sit with that discomfort, and we should, when we communicate with Latinos, sit with that, recognize and name that discomfort for them. We don't need to convert people into saying, you know, yes, abortions are amazing. Every abortion should happen in every single corner, and you should get an ice cream on your way out. That's not what we need here. And I think in our attempt in the United States to communicate, to normalize abortion and to reduce stigma around abortion, we have lightened it a little bit. Abortions are normal, they're very frequent, they're very useful, and it kind of sounds like abortions are not difficult, abortions are not, cannot be heavy. And the importance when messaging to Latinos is recognizing that yes, abortions can be heavy. And they can also be complicated. They aren't always, but they can be heavy. And you can have complicated feelings about abortions. You can also want an abortion and still have a complicated feeling around it and still feel grief around it. But it doesn't mean that you don't want to make that choice. And it doesn't mean that you don't think that it's the right choice for you. It is okay. We can hold space for all of these things to happen because we're talking about public health here. We're not talking about personal choices. We're talking about the system allowing for people to be able to make those choices more freely, providing them all the guidances. And then there's something else when talking to folks in Florida, specifically Latinos in Florida, which is government interference. So Latinos come to Florida, the vast majority share this idea of the American dream and this idea that the United States is, however misguided or, you know, however broken it can be, there is this, these are folks that left their countries in very difficult conditions to make their way to a place that they felt like was the bastion of freedom and opportunity. And there is something inherently heinous about that country curtailing their freedom this way. And that is something that pro-abortion messaging and Amendment 4 messaging needs to tap into. Like, this is the country of political freedom, right? This is supposed to be the country of political freedom. This is supposed to be the country where government doesn't interfere in our personal decisions and in, doesn't try to control us. This is supposed to be the country of opportunity. And so how all of this gets fully destroyed, how can I believe in the American dream if I come here and then someone forces me to have a child at age 18, curtailing my education, curtailing my capacity to up for upward mobility, and all of the dreams and the projects of life that I came here to pursue.
Yeah. Right? In other words, you get to America and immediately you're like, okay, so my rent is $3,000 for a one bedroom. I have to work two jobs, getting paid $7.25 an hour to make ends meet. I don't have healthcare. Grocery prices are through the roof, and oh shit, I'm pregnant. Well, fuck you. You're going to have the kid, and there's no assistance, by the way. American dream.
Correct. Brought to you by the same people that also say, no, we're not going to give you government funding for formula. No, we're not going to give you maternity leave. No, we're not going to help you with basic childcare. No, we're not going to provide any type of framework where being a parent is something easy or affordable for you. We're just going to screw you over.
A lot of this issue is tied up in the U.S. The sentiment behind it is one of shame. It's one of a failing in personal responsibility. And it resonates well. It's the uniquely like American religiosity. And I just wonder, was there a Latin American or like a South American version of like Horatio Alger that you guys had to read when you were little? Because we got a lot of that bullshit of like the newsboy that grows and all of that stuff, like the newsboy that grows up to own the newspaper. And it's a lot of American propaganda shit, and it sounds harmless, but it's really tied into this issue because it's like it repositions everything, and particularly this issue, it repositions it as a failing. You failed and you messed up. And it feels at least like on my Puerto Rican side of my family, they kind of always saw through a lot of that as like bullshit, but, these are things that happen. And I just feel like that's a very uniquely American thing and a very uniquely Floridian thing too, where we put all this like, you know, weight behind these personal responsibilities and these personal responsibility and use it as a cudgel on issues like this. But it feels like that cudgel's wearing a little bit thin.
Why the fuck do people want the government to shame them and tell them to go fuck themselves when they need options? I don't get it.
Yeah. It's like, well, you shouldn't have done this. Because our national posture is crouched and ready to say, well, you shouldn't have done that. And like, because that's what, I don't know, that's just like the perversity at the heart of the American experiment is like a little bit of like judgment of other people. And
also, don't forget the other religion, which is it's okay when I do it, which I think is what's going to probably carry the day with this amendment.
That is what's going to carry the day. Look, Danny, before we let you go, because we're at the top of the hour, and I know Tomas, if I know Tomas, he would love for you to share some resources and where people can plug in and get into, you know, get informed on this issue and maybe get activated a little bit. But one thing I wanted to share is I think it was in the chat that we were talking about this, where there is a Miami has become the home to right-wing sort of alt-right, like QAnon podcasters, right? They all do their shows here now, apparently, for some here and Austin,
including us.
Yeah,
including us. Yes. No, but there's an incredibly famous one.
Yeah, I'm doing fact-finding in Copenhagen.
So there's a very prominent one called Fresh and Fit that is very popular. A lot of people watch it, and it's men's right. It's two younger dudes that are like kind of men's rights activists, Andrew Tate type guys, and very popular. And what happened over the weekend was that audio leaked of one of them really pushing a woman who he had gotten pregnant to get an abortion. And I mean, whatever, like we could talk about the irony or just the celebrity gawking of it, but I don't care about that. What I care about is I feel like there's probably a lot of people out there like that guy, who's doing like a right-wing podcast, and on the streets, he's a men's rights activist guy, anti-abortion, super conservative, but in the sheets, it's like, come on, sweetie, let's be reasonable. I'm too young for this. I'm not ready to start a family, you know? And I wonder, I don't imagine there's any good data out there on how many of those guys there are out there, but I would imagine if there was, a heat map would have Florida super hot red, because I feel like a lot of them are down here.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, I would say, are going to find out that they feel that way once. It's very easy to be against abortion access when abortion access is the law of the land. And you can go and say whatever you need to say. But then when it directly affects you, and let's be very clear here, you know, one out of three people with a uterus will need an abortion in their time of their life. One out of four women in the United States, 4 to 5, depending on the numbers, will have a miscarriage, which will require the medical procedure of an abortion in order to, you know, complete miscarriage care. This issue is going to knock on your door. You know someone who will require this medical assistance, and it's going to be a much different conversation once that's the case, like you're seeing with these cases of these guys. Like, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So tell us, where can our listeners plug in if they want to become active on this issue in between now and November? I know it's still early days for the campaign, and you guys and everybody involved is still getting organized to organize, but like, what are some preliminary things people should do?
So the Yes on 4 campaign is launching officially tomorrow out of a rally in Orlando, and Yes on 4 socials are all up and running. I highly recommend that people sign up to volunteer, sign up to phone bank, sign up to Canvas. Nothing is more efficient than someone looking at you in the eyes and saying, yeah, listen, I hear you. I understand where you're coming from. This is what we're seeing, though, and this is incredibly dangerous. And it can put me in danger one day. It can put you or someone you love in danger one day, and we do not want that, right? Or whatever my personal reason is to be involved on this issue, let me share it with you. Looking at you in the eyes, this we know over and over again is the single most effective way. Second, have those internal conversations with the people that you already know that might be iffy. Take it upon yourself to have certain difficult, uncomfortable conversations and meet people where they are. It's okay if they're not where you are. People can have different reasons to support Amendment 4. It can be limiting government interference. That is a very valid reason. It can be access to safe miscarriage care. It can be whatever reason they need. It doesn't need to be your own reasons. Have those conversations. Start by listening. Start by asking people where they're at and then having a conversation from there. And then, of course, on the other side, on the services side, abortion continues to be legal in Florida up until 15 weeks until May 1st. After May 1st, abortion will only be legal in Florida after 6 weeks. But there are organizations here to help. Florida has abortion funds that help both with financial support and also with logistical support, aka travel support. If you need to get out of Florida, there are places where you can help. Visit ineedana.com. You can find both clinics that provide abortion care up until multiple different gestational ages, and you can search per gestational age, And you can also find support organizations for the type of support that you need. If you need help with a flight, if you need help with a hotel, if you need help with emotional support, psychological support, whatever you need, you can find it here. Reach out. We're here to help. We're not going anywhere. Abortions will continue to happen because we know that these bans do not stop abortions. And there's a lot of people that are not closing their doors and that are going to be here to help folks navigate this new scenario as best as we possibly can.
Yeah, and thank God for ballot referendums in Florida. Gives us the ability to both undo the destructive work that some lawmakers conduct in Tallahassee, and also do the work that other lawmakers from a certain opposing party are unable to get done. So, you know, if you're feeling cynical about electoral politics, if you're feeling cynical about supporting individual candidates, you always have a ballot referendum, or usually have a ballot referendum in Florida to actually enact change and help people. And we've seen that in the last few cycles, and we're seeing it again with this really, really important and crucial ballot referendum. So get involved.
Yeah, and donate to your local abortion fund. We need the money more than ever. And
we're going to include links to resources that Danny mentioned, and also to some of the social channels for Yes on 4. And we encourage everybody to make use of them, get involved, and try to help out on this issue. But in the meantime, as we get ready for this, what's going to be a long, 7 months? Oh, God, jeez. It feels like it should be much closer. Another one. We want to thank Danny Martins again for joining us and giving us all this great information and guidance on this important topic. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you all so much.